This is 40A&M N5, a weekly download of 40A&M LLC. For more information and for our terms of use, visit 40A-M.com. Taylor Swift decides to pull her catalog from Spotify. Apple reacts quickly to news of a malware plaguing its iOS in China. And AT&T makes a bid for USASL. All this and more, it was a busy week. Welcome back to 40A&M and 5, the weekly download of 40A&M LLC. It's Monday, November 10th, and I'm Chris Bohm. First up, Robert Hannigan, the new chief executive of Britain's electronic spying agency, GCHQ, went on the offensive this past week in an article in the Financial Times, arguing that the U.S. technology companies have become, in his words, the command and control networks of choice for terrorists, adding that some of these companies are in denial about the misuse of their services. As reported by the Financial Times, Mr. Hannigan's remarks reflect growing tensions between the Western intelligence community as internet companies are increasingly looking to protect their brand 1 year after revelations by whistleblower Edward Snowden of the widespread electronic surveillance activities. In the wake of the first revelations and over the past 10 to 12 months, UK authorities claim that GCHQ's intelligence collection abilities have become much harder as US technology companies have become less cooperative. Mirad Ahmed and Sam Jones of the Financial Times reported last week that ISIS fighters are currently prolific users of dozens of different social media platforms, from the well-known Twitter and YouTube to the more specialized Just Paste It or Russia's VKontakte. Robert Hannigan's remarks also highlighted that GCHQ and its sister agencies, MI5 and SIS, the UK's domestic and international intelligence agencies, respectively, cannot tackle these encryption challenges without greater support, adding that the security of communications and shift to encryption by such firms as Apple and Google has even increased the challenge to law enforcement. Mr. Hannigan said that these firms aspire to be neutral conduits of data and to sit outside or above politics, but he recalled for a mature debate on just how much privacy these firms should offer. Mr. Hannigan's article was remarkable in some respects, as GCHQ has long been known as perhaps the most secretive of the UK intelligence agencies. Mr. Hannigan's predecessor testified before Parliament in the wake of the first surveillance leaks last year, becoming the first GCHQ director to give public remarks. But Mr. Hannigan's message was also remarkable for its double edge, castigating tech companies while at the same time soliciting greater help from them. As of Friday, none of the major tech firms had reported directly to the GCHQ's director's remarks, but one tech industry insider told the Financial Times that it was for the government to legislate rules for internet surveillance rather than for UK intelligence groups to cajole tech companies into handing over sensitive information, adding that circumventing the current process, which requires a court order before a company hands over data, would be eliminating due process. What should we do, he said, if Saudi or Russian government also demanded that the information be handed over without process, he told the Financial Times. 6 months ago, UK politicians ruled out new legislation to compel internet companies to grant GCHQ access, and since that time, many companies have released transparency reports showing how many times they've received requests for user data from governments around the world. Executives told the Financial Times that these reports prove that, particularly in the UK, tech has not only been complying with official requests, but also that they've been doing so in greater numbers than before. Some tech industry representatives point to these numbers as one indication of how the message that tech isn't cooperating with law enforcement simply is not true. For instance, in August 2013, Facebook published its first transparency report showing that the UK requested data on 1,975 occasions, and out of these, only 32% of government requests were rejected. Facebook's latest numbers, released just this past week, showed that global government data requests were up by 24% to 34,946 requests between January and June of this year. But Facebook in particular has been just as aggressive in pursuing warrants for demanded information, including its appeal of a New York federal court order last year demanding that it hand over the data of nearly 400 users for purposes of a benefit fraud trial. Google had similarly reported in September that it had experienced a 15% increase in the number of government requests for data, and a 150% increase over the past 5 years from governments around the world. Taylor Swift, whose new album 1989 reached platinum status just last week in lightning speed since its release, is also no longer having her music streamed on Spotify. As of Monday, the entire Taylor Swift catalog was pulled from the online streaming service and its 40 million users. Swift's hit single from the new album, Shake It Off, had in fact been the most played song on Spotify the previous week. For its part, Spotify continues to market to perhaps win the artist back, with its CEO saying last Monday that we hope she'll change her mind and join us in building a new music economy that works for everyone. Taylor Swift's decision here does have some precedence in that she had pulled her last album, Red, from the streaming service for a time, but it eventually reappeared. National Public Radio, Rolling Stone, and others reported last week that the artist and her label, Big Machine, had been in discussions with Spotify to perhaps have her access to her catalog limited to the service's paid subscribers, those who pay $9.99 per month for the premium streaming service without advertisements. That apparently was not an option for Spotify, and as Swift discussed in the Wall Street Journal this past summer, she believes that artists should stand firm to be paid for what they create. In her journal comments, she wrote, "Music is an art, and art is important and rare. It's my opinion that music should not be free, and my prediction is that individual artists and their labels will someday decide what an album's price point is. I hope that they don't underestimate themselves or undervalue their art," she wrote. It's hard over the past week to underestimate Ms. Swift or the impact of her creative output. More than 700,000 people had already purchased 1989 in the first 2 days of its release, and she has quickly become renowned in the industry for her dogged and innovative promotional efforts, appearing on NBC's The Voice as a guest coach, regularly tweeting to her fans, and making the rounds of morning shows and chat shows like a pro twice her age. As discussed this past week on NPR's All Things Considered, these talents put her in a rare position to exercise this choice to pull her content from streaming services. And it's hard to say what, if any, impact her decision may have in the long term for Spotify, as other artists, such as Britain's Ed Sheeran, have weighed in on streaming services, Spotify in particular, and how these help to drive fans to his shows. According to Rolling Stone, album sales are down this year by 14%, figures they reprinted from Nielsen SoundScan, and track sales are down 13%. Paid subscriptions, however, jumped 57% last year, data that Rolling Stone reprinted from the RIAA. But yet, for Taylor Swift, the decision seems to be going her way. Truth be told, and full disclosure, yes, I also did buy the CD. The BBC and Reuters reported this past week on an amazing boy from California, and not only his invention, but also his entrepreneurial spirit. Shubham Banerjee is 13 years old, and it was announced last week that he has secured funding from Intel to bring a low-cost Braille printer of his own design to market. According to the BBC, Intel has not disclosed the exact sum it is giving, but Reuters reported it likely at a few hundred thousand dollars. The teen had rose to prominence after a showing at the White House of a prototype Braille printer that he had made with a Mindstorm EV3 Lego kit when he was just 12. Reuters reported that electronic Braille printing has great potential, but has to date been hindered by high device costs. Mr. Banerjee's company, Brago Labs, had $35,000 in seed money from his parents to turn what had originally just been a science fair project into a proper startup. The printer apparently works by inputting text from an attached keypad, which the machine converts to Braille via raised lumps punched on a roll of paper. Whereas the original had been powered by Lego and other DIY components, the latest version uses Intel's budget Edison chip and 3D printed parts, according to the BBC. Mr. Banerjee told the BBC that future versions might use batteries to make it accessible in parts of the world where a power-hungry printer might not be as useful. His goal, as he told Reuters, is to eventually sell a commercial model at about $350, which is a third of the cost of the least expensive alternative. Last Wednesday, security researchers Palo Alto Networks announced that they'd identified a malware labeled WireLurker, which had been infecting Apple iOS devices and applications. The malware had apparently been tagging along with pirated copies of Chinese Mac applications, downloaded from a third-party app store, Myady, but then would jump to iPhones and iPads over a USB cable. For its part, Apple had stated that it is aware of the malicious software available from a downloaded site aimed at users in China, and they've blocked the identified apps to prevent them from launching. However, according to The Guardian's Alex Hearn, the company hasn't elaborated on how it's carrying out the blocking, but did emphasize that, as always, they recommended that users download and install software only from trusted sources. As reported by The Guardian, the malware works by co-opting those capabilities in Apple's iOS that are designed to enable large enterprises to install their own application on employee devices. In this way, the malware not only can scrape data from the affected users' devices, but can go so far as to install third-party applications on those devices and infect already installed applications. Ryan Olson, director of Unit 42, the group within Palo Alto Networks that identify the malware, told Fox Business News that they don't believe that the intent of the wire lurker is espionage, but instead it is likely Chinese individuals attacking other Chinese customers. Apparently, this is the first iOS attacking malware identified, and although thousands in China have been impacted, Palo Alto Networks' Ryan Olson told Fox Business News that the firm saw this crack early and was able to seal it quickly. AT&T has agreed to pay $2.5 billion to acquire Mexico wireless provider Usacell, in a deal that would potentially give the second largest wireless carrier in the U.S. market Usacell's coverage of 70% of the Mexico market and 120 million potential customers. The deal would include all of Usacell's wireless properties, licenses, stores, and assets, as well as approximately 8.6 million current subscribers. AT&T Chairman and CEO Randall Stephenson, in prepared remarks, outlined an ambitious agenda for AT&T to establish the first ever North American mobile service area for U.S. customers, calling or visiting Mexico and Mexican customers calling or visiting the U.S. The first time a U.S. carrier will directly offer service outside its home country. This is an opportunity for us to provide Usacell the financial resources, scale, and expertise to accelerate the rollout of world-class mobile internet speeds and quality in Mexico, like we have in the U.S., Stephenson said. AT&T said that it plans to expand Usacell's network to cover millions of additional customers and businesses in Mexico. But it will be entering a market that to date has been largely dominated by Telcel, which is owned by billionaire Carlos Slim. CNET's Roger Cheng reports that, with recent legislation and construction of a new broadband network by the government, competition in the provision of wireless services in Mexico is expected to increase. Usacell operates on a network based in GSM, UMTS technology, like AT&T. And the acquisition of Usacell's 3G network would require review by Mexico's telecom regulator and also its National Foreign Investments Commission. Although the transaction is expected to close early in 2015, Usacell's partial owner, Grupo Salinas, must first close its intended purchase of the other 50% of Usacell that it doesn't already own before it can sell its complete stake to AT&T. AT&T is already in the process of acquiring DirecTV for $48.5 billion in a deal that would garner it a nationwide satellite TV business. And that will be all for us again this week. You have been listening to 48MN5. For more information and for our terms of use, visit 40a-m.com. All stories for this week's download are reported by at least two online or print news sources or taken directly from relevant releases, with the exception of specific reporting highlighted from The Financial Times, Rolling Stone, the BBC, The Guardian, The Wall Street Journal, Fox Business News, and CNET. Thank you for listening. 48MN5 will be back with you again on Monday, November 17th. Until then, of course, make this week and every week one to remember. And bye for now.